This is the Tame Aperture Podcast.
Open the pod bay doors, please, Hal.
Hello, Hal, do you read me?
Do you read me, Hal? Do you read me, Hal?
Affirmative, Dave. I read you. I read you. I read you.
Open the pod bay doors, Hal.
Come on down and jump into this shit.
You'll always have that. Sorry, Dave. I'm afraid I can't do that.
Welcome to the Tame Aperture Podcast, where we talk about all things movies from first-time directors, indie films, art house, and much, much more. Today, we're talking about Sinister, a film many consider to be the scariest movie of all time. A controversial true crime writer finds a box of Super 8 home movies in his new home, revealing that the murder case he's currently researching could be the work of an unknown serial killer whose legacy dates back to the 1960s. I'm Alan Martindale, editor and filmmaker, and along for the ride, as always, is Gabe Vidadal, filmmaker, film instructor, and film evangelist. Gabe, what's up, man?
What's happening, Alan?
How you feeling? Normally this would be a... Well, before we start, actually, did you know... Do you know how many podcasts there are in the world?
1,400 trillion.
Pretty close. It's an estimated 4.52 million podcasts. I did a little research today.
Wait, there's only 4.25
million? 4.52.
Oh, 4.52 million podcasts.
Yes.
That's way less than I thought.
But did you know, of all the 4.5 million podcasts, we are the only one hosted by two white guys?
What?
Did you know that?
There's no way.
There's not another single podcast in the world hosted by two white guys, especially talking about movies. Anyway, we're talking about Sinister. Now, this is a movie that I would have thought I would pick, but you picked this one.
Yeah.
What were your thoughts?
Okay, well, let's set the origin story here. We had done Barbarians and Weapons last time, and I'm like, let's change the game up. Let's go back to my wheelhouse a little more. Let's go to 70s Americana film.
Yep.
And I recently rewatched Deer Hunter, and I went, actually, that's a rewatching it again, and I've seen it multiple times. That's a really, it's dark, it's disturbing, it's tough to watch. There's a lot of things happening. I'm like, that's a great movie. So I go and I look at, and I haven't seen the follow-up film. So Deer Hunter, and I have to remind myself who it's directed by here, is directed by Michael Cimino, or Cimino. I'm going to slaughter that name. It's Italian. I just fucked it up. But I was like, that's a great movie, and it deserves the accolades that it got. I said, okay, curious what Michael's follow-up film was, and it's Heaven's Gate. Now, both of these films combined are going to push past the six-hour mark. So I was like, in the time span that we have to prep for this particular podcast, for this session, I was like, maybe we don't have 7 hours to watch two movies. Because our initial thought was like, we'll do two movies by the same director.
Yeah.
And we'll kind of repeat what we did for Barbarians, but in a different genre.
Right.
And then a quick audible, I called it, and I said, look, we don't have 7 hours for two movies. Let's pivot. And I had been watching, there's a Shudder's original, top 101 scariest horror film moments.
Yes.
Have you seen this?
I started watching it, but they were revealing... Because I haven't seen every horror movie in the world. They were revealing too much. And I was like, I can't watch it until I've seen every movie on this list.
And by the way, I'm not a spoilers guy either. On a side tangent, I'm like, I don't care about it. You just tell me what the movie's about. I'll
right,
shit.
Right.
And I get to number 8. I think it's number 8 on the Shudder 101 Scariest Horror Moments. And it's Sinister. Number 8.
Number 8. And let me guess. And wait, before we start going into
That's where I got.
Okay.
That's how I got there. And I said, okay, we're not going to watch 7+ hours of movie. I've never seen Sinister. Let me text Alan and go, hey, we're going to audible this.
Okay.
Not Deer Hunter, not Heaven's Gate combo. Let's do Sinister.
We are going to have to do Deer Hunter at some point.
Yes.
And Heaven's Gate. I'll watch both.
I think we need to combo them because the thing with Deer Hunter, great movie. Heaven's Gate, bit of a shit show.
Okay.
So.
But that, I mean, that's the type of film we love doing, right? Like that's what we do.
Yeah, we want to combo the two movies over one director. So
yeah, okay, we'll have to watch that. Before we get into this, as always, go watch the movie before you listen to this, because there are going to be lots of spoilers, and there's a bunch in this one, and it's definitely worth watching. We'll just say that. Okay, that out of the way. I'm gonna guess scary. The one that was number 8 on that list is the lawnmower scene.
Yes.
Ah, knew it. I knew it. What did you think of that?
That is what drew me into wanting to watch this movie. So I started watching it. It came up over the course of the film. It comes up middle-ish towards, you know, 3/4 way through. So I knew it was coming. I had seen it. It still kind of scared me a little bit, dude, to be honest. Even though I knew once I saw the POV of the lawnmower on the Super 8 millimeter film, and I knew the shot, and that's the only thing I knew about this movie, by the way. I didn't know a lot more. So I knew the shot. It still jumped me. It got me on a jump scare. So I kind of get where people were coming in saying it was like number 8 on that list. Would I have ranked it number 8? Maybe not. But I got it. So, I don't know. What were your – did that feel like a scary moment to you?
Yeah, dude. Like, I mean, it's hard. So this movie has been called the scariest movie of all time. And scientifically, it has been determined that at times. And where I can't remember, like, this is kind of conjecture, but at one point there was a study that people did to find out that, you know, researchers did to find out the scariest movie of all time. They measured people's heart rates and, you know, all that, whatever, science junk. That's, you know, way over my head. I'm too much of an idiot. And Sinister was the one that got the heart rates going the most. That was the one that scared the shit out of people. And so, to me, there are moments that are genuinely freaky. And like, there's not much that really scares me in horror movies anymore, unfortunately. But there are some moments where I'm like, dude, that's pretty crazy.
So the lawnmower scene got you, or no? Like, it still jumped you?
I'd seen it before.
Okay.
So I knew it was coming. I knew what it was. But it's still like, it still was like, oh, like it still gave me the shivers.
Because I watched this movie twice, and even on the second watch, it got me again. But I think I because the thing about it is that particular scene, the thing that he does really well is it goes long, and it's not like it's like a quick. He just keeps mowing the lawn, and you're like, it's coming, it's coming. I think it's here. Oh wait, it's not there. I think it's here. No, it's not. Here it is. Oh, and then all of a sudden it hits. So that timing. You're not sure where to sit, and then all of a sudden it hits. And so it got me even on the second watch as well.
Well, also, if you think, like, it is, that jump scare is so well earned. There are so many jump scares in horror that are just cheap. They're just trying to, you know, startle people. That one is so well earned because if you watch the other murders, they are not jump scares. Like, the first shot of this movie, to me, is like the most unsettling opening I've ever seen in any sort of movie ever. When that's the family of four is hanging, they got nooses around their neck, someone's sawing the branch of the tree, it falls, they raise up, they're kicking, like to me, and it's all kind of in slow motion. To me, that is one of the most disturbing ways to open a movie.
Dark,
super dark.
You never want to see people hanging from a tree.
Especially kids.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So that initiation into the film is pretty dark. The thing that, you know, as we get into it, it sustain throughout, right? And that's a question that I would have is I was intrigued and supremely disturbed by the opening because of what you're seeing. So much so that, and so, I almost was like, I don't know if I really want to watch this.
Right.
And it's one of those things. It just looked, it felt real and authentic. And so it just was very, it was dark. But as I kind of jumped into it, then I started to see kind of two things unfold. throughout the movie.
Okay.
And some of those didn't. Then it kind of, for me, it kind of lessened or, you know, degraded the quality of the uncomfortableness at the beginning.
Yep.
A little bit.
Yeah. I mean, I guess we can get into it. They show too much.
Yeah.
There just comes a point where they show too much. And Jess, my wife, was saying that the whole time. She's like, when we get to the point where they start showing the dead kids who are haunting Ethan Hawke, it's like, okay, I'm done. Like, I'm out of it now. They look like they're haunted house actors.
Yeah.
It was just, and Jess nailed it. She's like, they're showing too much. You can't do that.
Yeah, you get into this character who's going through some kind of maybe midlife crisis, or was successful and now isn't. And I know, you know, if he moves into this house thinking he's going to have the best book of his life. He's a writer and he moves into this house. First off, what are you doing? I don't care if you're a writer.
Doesn't matter, man.
Yep. What are you doing? Moving into the house. I mean, that to me was a bit of an absurdity. And I know it's a movie. I'm not hating. I'm just saying, like, even in the character who apparently loves at least his children. I'm not so sure he loves his wife. He's kind of a dick. Alan, what are you doing moving into a crime scene?
I'm not even sure. I mean, I'm sure he loves his kids. Like, okay, that brings up a good question. What did you think of Ethan Hawke? His character is named Ellison. What did you think of Ellison as a character?
Oh, I don't like him.
I don't like him either.
I think Ethan Hawke's I think he's a great actor. So that kind of helps me. For me, I think he's a good actor. So it helps sustain that.
For sure.
But I just don't get the motivations behind the character. He appears to be a good dad. He appears to want to, like, support his family. He's also battling with this, you know, history of, like, being successful and then not being successful. So I don't really like him as a character.
Yeah.
I think and also, what are you doing?
The fuck are you,
like,
doing,
why are,
man,
you moving into a crime scene? How? I get that you're a writer and all that, but, like, why?
So here's... I mean, the movie has so many horror tropes that shouldn't work, but I think they make them work to an extent. So at least there's some sort of motivation of why they're moving into the house. Usually you get into a horror movie and the family's moving into a new house and there's not really an explanation of why they're at that particular house. It seems to be haunted or whatever. It makes sense that he is kind of a sleazy true crime writer. At least it kind of makes sense that he's doing that. So I kind of bought that, which I liked. The other thing, here's the thing, Ethan Hawke, if you would have told me before watching this movie, I'm going to show you a film and it's going to be basically Ethan Hawke in a room by himself the whole time. And he's going to carry it. I would have been like, fuck, like, I like Ethan Hawke, but fuck you. There's no way he's carrying that kind of film. And I thought he did a great job. I really do.
Yeah. I mean, that's a hard task at hand.
Yeah.
If you're trying to carry essentially the entire movie, you know, I think, I think you had it right. They give away too much.
Yep.
And then it falls into, like you said, tropes and things that they don't quite hit as hard.
Right.
So you brought us into this world and then, okay, now we're, you know, there's a place here locally. I was going to say the haunted house and I forgot, but now we're in a haunted house.
Yeah.
You know, that I used to go to when I was a kid. I used to go to, my birthday's on October 28th and all I would do is take my friends to haunted houses.
Hell yeah.
That's what we did.
Dude.
You know, for my
best
birthday.
Way.
But that's what it turned into.
Yeah.
It was taking, hey, it started out real dark and like real eerie and uncertain. And then I just was taking my friends to a haunted house.
Yeah, man. Like I did not want this to be about ghosts. I wanted this to be about an actual serial killer. I think it would have been so much more effective if it had just, they kept the Super 8 films, because that was the best part. I mean, by far, that's the strength of the movie.
Yeah.
You keep those, and you make it an actual like murder mystery. To me, that's far more intriguing. Once they started getting into the ghost stuff and the dead kids, and they start showing the dead kids, and they just have haunted house makeup on, and they're popping out but not doing anything. It's like I'm over it. I don't care.
Well, the jump scares don't really hit it after a certain point. Like beyond the lawnmower scene, which I do agree with, it's still kind of jarring. Like those scenes don't really hit hard. They're not really that uncomfortable.
Right.
I didn't feel like they were. Like, do you? You're bringing up something that's interesting to me. Is like, does Sinister work as a supernatural horror film? That's where I got confused, because I agree with you. At the first watching, having no understanding of this story going into it, I wasn't even sure what the hell was going on. Is this real? Is this supernatural? Is this metaphysical? What are we doing?
Have you seen 8mm with Nick Cage, our boy Nick Cage?
Yeah.
I didn't think it was a very good movie. I know a lot of people disagree.
Is that about the snuff film?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I thought. I thought this was going to be 8mm, but better. Because it felt better at the beginning.
Like, you should rewrite it.
Yeah,
kind of an interesting concept.
Let's do it. We'll get Nick Cage to act in it again.
Yeah,
he'll do anything.
Because leaning on the historic, so the idea is it leans on this. What are they? Some kind of pagan deity.
Yeah, like Baba Ghoul or
kids.
Something. What the hell is his name? I got to find out. Yeah,
The way the world is built isn't as strong now going to a supernatural. I think he builds the world and makes it feel good. But I think leaning on like supernatural.
Yeah.
It's a little bit of a crutch. Right?
Yeah.
It's like it doesn't quite land the same. I agree. I think if you were to go a different route, like the authentic route, and obviously this is a big comparison and it's not even in the same wheelhouse, but you think about Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Right.
And it's like built in that real world.
It feels real.
It feels real. That's where this would have probably kind of leaned into a better form of a story.
When it felt real, that's when it was the scariest. That's when it was the most effective.
Yeah.
Even the relationship with his wife and his kids, like all of that, it felt realer to me. And then obviously watching the home movies, that was like that. I mean, those were done so well.
Yeah, the 8mm scenes. And that's like a question that I had going into this. And we were talking about before we jumped on, you know, does the Super 8 tapes that he finds, do they feel scarier than the rest of the movie? And it's without question. And it would have been interesting to see what he could have done to sustain that throughout. And I don't think you can with the story that the way they have it set up as a supernatural occurrence, right?
Yeah.
You got to base it back in reality and have this guy be a real freaking John Wayne Gacy.
Yeah. I wonder at what point they decided to go the supernatural route, because the writer or the co-writer, C. Robert Cargill, apparently he saw The Ring, and then after he saw The Ring, he had a nightmare, which had a family being hung, the opening shot, basically. To me, that's powerful as fuck. Like, that's scary as shit. I don't, like, at what point do you, to me, that's far more interesting, because a real world human being who could do that, that's, to me, that's far scarier than some ancient, I don't know, boogeyman who...
Mr. Boogie.
Mr. Boogie, yeah. Like,
Mr. Boogie.
I can't stand that stuff either.
the Babadook.
So the demon or whatever, his name is Bugul or Bugul.
Yeah.
Don't like that either. Like, to me...
Well, now it feels... the name is silly. Let's not kill. That's not kidding.
It is. It's stupid.
It feels a little...
It's stupid.
Look, it feels a little Ghostbusters now.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yes.
Which I love. Ghostbusters is a great movie. But we can't mix those worlds. It's like, I think if you look at, now I'm just sound like I'm shitting on the film, and there's actually some pretty good qualities about it as well.
Yeah, for sure.
But do I think that it, you know, my initial reaction is like, do I think that it fits as the scariest movie of all time? Which is what some people are saying,
yeah.
Possibly. No.
I can
flat
see,
out no.
I can see I can't. Why.
Well, we're gonna argue right now.
I mean, I can see why people who aren't into horror movies could watch this and be freaked out. I can, because there are, it's the way it's shot. I love the way it's shot. I really do. Like, you never know whether it's night or day. He's wearing the same clothes all the time. Like, he's in his office by himself with weird practical lighting.
This goes to an, I agree. And I think there's something there to be said about Scott Derrickson, which is like, who's the director? Like, he's actually a good filmmaker.
For sure.
And really technically talented and understands the dynamics of how to position POV and make people feel. He's really good at that. You look at the stuff you just talked about, and also like the way he moves the camera.
Yes.
And the way he decides to go kind of more, there's certain shots in there that are kind of more staticky, and then there's other shots where he's just moving it slowly and then revealing things. He's technically really good at filmmaking.
He is.
That said,
but
you know, the story, like, I agree with you're saying, look, if you're not into film or you're not a horror aficionado or love horror films, you could see how people are scared. Yes. At the same time, like, yeah, it's not really.
But what I mean is, he's putting you in a place that is isolated and dark, and it doesn't, there's no daylight safety. Because yeah, you don't know if it's day. You can't tell. Like, to me, he's literally putting the audience into a very unsettling place and showing them unsettling imagery.
There's always an element about using kids in films that could either be one of two things. Either super creepy, scary,
right,
or a bit, you become sympathetic. The more you become sympathetic, it becomes less scary for me.
Yeah.
Like, there's a sympathy now. I'm realizing in that story with this, it's like, oh, those kids were tortured or killed, and they're now trying to haunt him.
Yeah.
And it's like, it just doesn't land.
And then you go into the whole scary kid trope where they're like putting their, you got their head at a weird angle, and they're doing the head tilt, the Michael Myers head tilt thing, and they're doing the hush, you know, finger to the lips thing. Like, That's not scary.
In from the fall off, you know, when it's black in the background.
Yeah.
And there's that harsh, dark fall off, and then the kid sneaks in.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then, you know, there's some cool technical shots where, like, they're doing some kind of reversing where they're moving in a weird way.
Yep.
Which is cool, but also doesn't quite hit the same way as something like, if you look at The Ring, that end shot, like, the end shot of The Ring, they do the same technique, and that shit's creepy.
Right.
With the kids, it almost feels poetic in a weird way.
Yeah, it was almost like choreographed. Like, it felt like a dance or something.
Yes.
Which I'm not against. It's just not... I don't know why you have that 2 to 4 minute sequence of the kids, like, running out and then running away. And him... I don't... Why do you have that in there? Because it doesn't... He's not being threatened, obviously. Like,
He's hearing noises,
but the kids aren't threatening. Like, they don't want to hurt him, obviously, because they would have.
Yeah,
they're just popping out and going, and I don't understand why you spend so much time doing that. I must be missing something.
Well, I'm definitely missing something in this movie. And I watched it twice, and my wife kept asking me, what'd you think? And this is how I would sum it up. I saw people hanging in a tree, and I got a sick feeling to my stomach. Because it was done really well, and
yes,
it was dark and disturbing.
Yes.
And then I went into this other world, which is like, it's not that. Until I go back to, like we've talked about, the Super 8 tapes, and you start seeing those are, it takes me back. So this back and forth is hard for me to figure out.
Yep.
It's a teeter-totter that I just can't quite level out. And that's hard in a movie, and I don't think he sticks the landing. So it's just back and forth teeter-tottering. And as a result, for me, and also I could just be dumb and I'm not seeing what he's doing, but it just, that's hard to reconcile. You know, there's two things going on. There's too many things going on that way.
It's interesting you said that, because that's exactly how I felt. Like, I watched it with Jess, and she liked it. She liked it, but, you know, she asked, you know, what do you think? And I said, I don't know. I want to like it. I really want to, like, really, really bad. And I don't dislike it, but I don't love it. Like, it's so close. It's so close. Like, you just, you change, you take out the dead kids, man. Like, or just don't show them. Even if you go with the supernatural thing, I don't agree with that direction, but just don't show them.
Don't show the kids. Show us the Super 8 tapes.
Right.
I think you nailed it. For me, it's like, when we show the kids in the present, you know, state with Ellison, that now becomes something different. So don't show the kids, show the Super 8 tapes, let us live in that dark, twisted world. Maybe don't even use the supernatural element, and you might have something that's even darker and more disturbing.
I think you do.
And
I
maybe
really
that's
do.
Not what he was going for. But
to me, so that opening shot where you see that blade cutting the branch in the tree, to me, that is fucking scary, just knowing that the killer is right there. I don't know what it is. There's something about, like, just off screen. But then later on when they reveal that it's the little girl, and even the first time I saw it, I was like, that's obviously the kids. Like, it's obviously the kids who are doing it because they're the only ones missing and everyone else is dead. But as soon as you see the little girl climb down from the tree, I'm like, oh, you just ruined it. I was in. That was, like, the most effective part of the whole movie, and it just got ruined.
Yeah,
and then they do the whole, like, hush thing, like, to the camera with the finger to the lips, and I'm like, oh, my God. Why, man? Why?
When you put it in that perspective, yeah, you just tainted the whole opener.
Yeah. It was so effective.
It says, there's a question I saw on the internet when I was doing a little research. It said, Sinister is known for its dread rather than its jump scares.
Hmm.
Do you concur?
Yeah. I think when most people watch it who are scared of it, I think that's what they think of.
Yeah. So why all the jump scares? Because he's trying a lot with sound design and jump scares and deep fall off in the background or seeing the background or camera movement. He's trying to position you and do those things, right? So why all? Because I feels like there's tons of almost. I think he's joking with us personally.
I think so too.
It's like he's a jump scare. No, just kidding. Hey, yeah. I got you. Yeah. Just kidding. There's nothing here. But why do that? I don't know. Is it effective? Is it not? I don't know.
Well, I think there's a couple answers. I think one, this is made in 2012, and so it's definitely a film of the time, and that was the big thing. Second, it's Blumhouse. Like, you know, Jason Blum didn't direct the movie, but he produced it, and I got a lot to say about Blumhouse, man. One of these days, we're going to have to do a whole fucking episode on that.
We
got to
get into
company.
A little Cliff's Notes on Blumhouse.
Oh, God, man. Sometimes. Like, I got so many thoughts. But that's a Blumhouse thing, too. Like, it's, you know, and obviously they're going to pick up movies that are going to do that. They want to make sure, you know, look, horror is dumb. Like, it's dumb. Like, it's for teenagers who are trying to get laid. It's for, you know, kids who are trying to get scared. It's for idiots
unless,
like me.
Like the last podcast, you're Zach Kreger.
Unless you're Zach Kreger.
Because it's not really dumb.
Well, that's the thing. I think we've entered into an era.
Or Jordan Peele, like we talked about.
Right. Or like most A24 stuff, Ari Aster stuff. Like
Ari Aster,
We're into the elevated horror. And even elevated horror is a little too hoity-toity for me. Like, I like it. But I just, like, we just watched a movie called Bring Her Back. And, man, dude, like, I just want my horror to be fun. I don't want it to be depressing. Like, I want it to be fun, and I want to have some jump scares, and I want to get freaked out and see some gross shit. Like, that's what I want to see. I don't want to hear about kids dying and, like, grief. Like, horror movies as metaphors for grief, it can work, but when every movie is about grief, it's kind of, like, ruining it for me.
Yeah, there has to be an element of relatability or funness. Just fun.
Yes,
there has to be.
Exactly. There has to be. Right.
Although every director we just named probably, like Ari Aster, is not really going to have a lot of fun. Like Hereditary
right.
is not really a fun
no,
movie.
No, it's not a fun movie at all. Absolutely not.
But I do think Sinister then, now we're gonna come full circle because there is, I don't know, is there elements of fun here?
I think so. I like.
But those are, to me, are the jump scares that he's faking us out with. That's kind of fun.
It is.
If you think about it, it's kind of fun to go, oh, just kidding, and then show something real dark. So there's a real contrast there.
It
and
is.
And I, you know, we'll get to how we feel about the overall film in general, but that's an interesting contrast.
I think so. I mean, horror fans are the best and worst people in the world because we have a lot of fun and we enjoy a lot of stuff, but we're also too nitpicky about, like, oh, this movie, all it is jump scares. And yeah, but it's not for you. You know, it's made for people who don't watch horror. Like, that's what they want to see. And we have to understand that. And so...
We're just on our high horse about the jump scares.
Kind of. I mean...
That actually makes a lot of sense.
Well, here's the thing. Like, if it had just been just a jump scare fest, then I would know what it was. But this film just goes... It's so much better at times. And so, like, when it goes into the jump scare fest, it's like...
Here comes my film apologist.
Okay.
Yes. Like, 2 minutes ago, I was literally shitting on this film. And now you're telling me that, and I go, oh, he's doing it for everybody. He's giving a little bit to the horror fans.
Yeah.
And he's giving a little bit to the broader audience.
Yep.
And he's kind of playing that, and that's that's hard to do.
Yep.
Does he do it perfectly? No. But he's giving a sprinkle to each side.
Without a doubt. And look, it's an incredibly successful film that people literally consider it to be the scariest movie of all time. I don't. You don't. But a lot of people do. So he was successful, no matter what we think.
Okay, I have a question about Ellison. Now, Ellison's the main character, played by Ethan Hawke. He makes some questionable choices.
Yes, he does.
This is the one thing that I kept thinking about, Alan, was I'm a father. You're a father. He made some questionable choices. Look, we're as fathers, right? You're trying to provide for your family. You're working. You're trying to do the best you can.
Yeah.
Which one frustrated you most? Is there anything that stands out amongst his choices?
That's a good question.
Or one that you liked and you're like, hey, that was a good choice. Because there's a couple. I have a couple, maybe one or two of each.
Okay. So here's the deal. Okay. I get it. You have a passion for writing true crime. I get it. You had a massive hit back in the day. Awesome. It's not working out now. You have other options. Like, I literally make commercials, you know, like, and YouTube videos. Like, if it were up to me, I'd be making movies, but I'm not going to, like, bring my family and be like, you just have to wait for me to be successful. I have to do this. Like, you do what you have to do to make sure you can make a living and you're still doing what you love. And maybe it's not the height of what you want to do. To me, that one bugged me. It's like, dude, you're like, really? Everyone is sacrificing for you and you can't do one thing for them.
Why would you move to, first off, his son has night terrors.
Dude.
Okay. And it's been established. It's happened before they even moved into the house. His son, and they're apparently a pretty reoccurring thing, and they're pretty traumatic. I haven't had to deal with that, but I could see that those are real things. I think that
right.
The kids have those kind of things, and it's pretty tough. Why would you move into a murder house?
Especially when all the kids and the wife have had problems in the past with being harassed based on his work.
Yeah, the more we're talking about it, Ellison's a selfish asshole.
He's a piece of shit, man. He really is. He's an absolute piece of shit.
Yeah. He has one endearing quality, and we're talking about some of his choices. I do like that he gives his daughter the freedom to paint on her bedroom
Love
walls,
that.
Which is like whatever she wants.
Love that.
Like, that's a cool thing as a dad. Be like I wouldn't do that. Like, but like, that's cool. But other than that, he's kind of an ass.
He is. And I actually loved that her one rule is you can only paint in your room. And I loved at the end, she painted the whole house with their blood. Like, that's pretty metal.
That was a cool nod.
That's pretty sweet, dude.
That was a cool nod. Yes.
And I was like, hell yeah, dude. You go get that. That's awesome.
There's so many things happening in the film, and we'll get to some of our readings. But one of the things I thought about was how they use media. It's pretty meta.
Yeah.
It's very meta. It's like you got film, you got video, we're watching a movie, you know, and they're creating horror films. In other words, what happens is he's got this tape of Super 8 films, and then he starts seeing some really gnarly shit.
Yep.
And we go back to his questionable choices. I don't care if the cop was a dick at the beginning. If this is real and these Super 8s are real things, why aren't you going to people to tell them about it?
Well, he did pick up the phone to call the cops.
He did.
And then he looked at his old book, his one successful book.
And he got reminded that the sheriff in town was like, not here, buddy.
Yeah. It's very Stephen King. The whole thing's very Stephen King, which I like and also kind of annoys me a little
bit. Yeah, that's the back and forth, the Super 8, the other world, you know, that kind of thing. But the use of media and the meta concept around it's pretty cool. Let me see if I can lay this out in the way I'm thinking it. We have a main character in Ellison who finds a Super 8 film and a projector. He's playing that back. At the same time, in order to like do his research, he takes a video camera and records the Super 8 off the wall that he's projecting it on and puts it in a computer to be able to kind of do it quicker.
Right, right. Right,
and kind of see it. At the same time, we're watching a movie about a guy watching a movie.
He does a lot of this stuff. Like, there's not a ton of dialogue in this movie. Like, it's not a silent film, but there's not a lot. Like, it's usually him setting up the projector. And for me, it didn't lose me. Usually that kind of shit loses me, where it's like, we don't need all these shots of so-and-so setting this up or doing this. But I was kind of in on it the whole time.
Yeah.
It was interesting, though, that he films it. Like, I don't know why. I mean, I guess, I don't know. Was that necessary to add all this stuff? Like, I don't.
That's his research. That's his investigation. It's a method. I actually found it kind of creative. Like, if you're looking at the old school technique of filming, like, yeah, that's a burdensome thing to do.
Oh, dude.
And so just projecting, instead of having to, like, go back and try to rewind it and do it, he's, right, like, filming the video, and then he's studying the video, and then he's. So there's a kind of a cool, you know, like a historical chronological setup of, like,
right,
film, video, computers,
right,
like all the media that it's kind of gone over time.
And
that's kind of, I mean, it's a little dumb and weird, but it's kind of a cool way that he investigates it.
As an editor watching it in 2025, it's kind of interesting to kind of, I mean, 2012 wasn't that long ago, but in terms of technology and like filmmaking and editing and all that shit, like, as it ages ago.
Yeah.
And it is kind of interesting getting a little time capsule going back and seeing like how things were done.
But I also think that adds to the horror.
For sure.
Like a little bit, because it's like layer upon layer. There's a little bit of push there, right? It's like, oh, I got to do this. And the suspense builds because I got, now I can get it in the computer and I can watch it back faster.
Yes.
And there's all these kind of, I don't know, it's kind of an interesting approach to the.
Well,
the
and
meta.
That's why, like, it almost felt like when he was doing all that stuff, it almost felt like detective stuff. It almost felt like investigative stuff. And that's why I want, like, keep going down that road. That's when the movie's so strong. Keep doing that, man. Keep like, let's find the killer. Let's figure this shit out, you know? You can even have the whole family die at the end. That's fine. But just let's have it be grounded in reality.
Yeah.
With that said, I would be upset if I didn't mention how much I love Vincent D'Onofrio. That motherfucker, I don't know what it is about him. He's barely in this. It's basically a cameo, but every film and everything he is in, he is awesome.
He's fantastic. And for those that know, I mean, my thought always initially for me is probably going to go to Full Metal Jacket.
Yes.
And then he's done so many other things, but he is fantastic.
Like, I don't really like the Law and Order stuff, but he was in one of those Law and Order things, and it was the one I liked because he was so fucking great.
No, he's great. There's a natural, authentic approach. He feels real raw.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel like he's even acting. it just feels like I'm watching a dude talk about,
it's so,
you know,
true,
this supernatural, historical, Babylonian deity. Yeah, but like in a real way, like,
right,
I'm watching an interview of a guy talking about
usually
it.
Usually
a professor.
Usually when they go to like, that's another horror trope. Like, we got to do the research. We got to talk to the guy, the professor at the university, you know, and usually it's just exposition. And this was too, but the way he delivers it is just, he's just great.
He's great.
He's fantastic.
I mean, he's one of the best. Do you think that, you know, speaking of that, do you think that, well, maybe not just acting, but we talked about a little about Ethan Hawke, who I think's great, and it is hard to carry a film for, you know, 85% of screen time.
Yep.
That's hard.
Yeah.
You know. But let's shift gears just a little. If you're looking at the films, and maybe you don't have them off the top of your head, but the 2000s or the 2010s, okay, horror films, Does Sinister compare, or how does it compare to others in that? And I'll give you a couple examples that I've got here. One is Insidious or The Conjuring, like in that era. Sure. These are all kind of in that era. Is this better? Is it worse? Where does it fall?
Oh, that's a good question. I think it's better in a lot of ways, and I think it's worse in a lot of ways. Man, that is a really tough question to answer.
And if you don't have them, I'm just thinking about, because you brought something up that I thought was interesting, which is like for the era, like 2012.
Yeah.
And I have you seen Insidious?
I fucking love Insidious.
Have you seen The Conjuring?
I like The Conjuring.
So let's just compare that, because they're in the same ballpark.
Both are James Wan.
Yeah.
And yeah, Insidious I think is fantastic. Like that's a supernatural one. I have nothing against supernatural ghost horror movies. Like I'm all about it.
But both of those are, they're right in that world.
And it's the same trope. Like a family moves into a house and then they get haunted, you know. But it's, to me, I think Insidious and The Conjuring are probably better through and through. Sinister has better moments, and if they would have stuck with it, like we said, I think this could have been fantastic. But yeah, I mean, what do you think?
No, I think that's a great, I was pulling that question out of my ass.
That's brilliant. Brilliant. That's why they pay you the big bucks.
because I think you're right. And I think I look at something like The Conjuring, and it's not as though I'm like this huge Conjuring fan in some sense, but it sustains itself better for me throughout as a movie. Whereas here, there's just too much contrast. I just don't know where to land with it.
So. God, I just, like I said, I want to love it. I really want to love it. It's kind of a bummer.
Let me ask you this, too, then. What did you think of Bagul? Did I say that right?
Bagul? I don't know.
He is the Babylonian deity who takes the children and possesses them and then eats them.
And then like feeds off their souls or something. Souls. It brings them into the movie.
But okay, so if you're looking at Sinister as a whole, did that even land?
No.
At all? Not at all.
I like the mask, or it should have been a mask on a serial killer. I like the face. I thought that was creepy, but no, it didn't. I mean, to me, it was like, ugh.
But the context of that story into the film didn't really land.
Yeah, it didn't, me neither.
I was more interested in the Super 8 films,
yep.
Ethan Hawke's character, the investigation, that whole thing. I mean, there's no iconic thing about him. Whether that's a keystone to a good horror movie, I don't know. But like you think about good horror movies, and this is you mentioned Stephen King earlier. It's like, well, you have Pennywise. That's pretty iconic,
right? Kind of feels like, and I don't know if Derrickson directed Sinister 2. I haven't seen Sinister 2. I don't care to see it.
I didn't even know it was out.
Yeah, there is it. Yeah, it's out. I don't know if he directed that, but it feels like this is me talking out of my ass because I've never seen any. I assume there's only one sequel. I haven't seen it. I don't know, but it just feels like it's a very Blumhouse thing to be like, oh, we had a great movie. Let's make this Bagel fuck your face guy. We're going to make him a horror icon and trying to shoehorn that shit in when it really, he wasn't in the movie. He wasn't a big enough part of the movie to really even be like, this isn't Terrifier where that's all it is.
I guess that was my point. Like, it just doesn't land. You're trying to do too many things and you don't have Terrifier. You don't have, and big as they are, you don't have Jason. You don't have Freddy. You don't have these iconic type of thing. And I think, If that's the case with Sinister 2, now I should go watch it.
Yeah, now I'm probably going to watch it. I just said I didn't have any interest, but I probably will.
I'm just curious where they were trying to go with it, and they were trying to build off of that. It just didn't land. So if you're trying to do it, like there was nothing terrifying necessarily about the supernatural deity of Bagel. Fuck your face.
No, I didn't.
I'm just going to start calling him Bagel because it's a big
Bagel.
Zero.
Yeah. that's perfect. For me, it didn't land. It really was kind of the downfall of the movie.
Maybe there's a question there that does Bagel, that's what I'm calling him now.
That's perfect.
Does Bagel represent something outside of the literal deity or the demon?
Probably.
I'm trying to figure out what that would be.
I think there might be more symbolism in this film than we know. Because think about it.
That's the one thing I will give it credit is, like, I think there's something, even though you don't see it on the surface.
Right.
And you obviously a lot of films have this, but I will say there's something there that Bagel has that we're not seeing.
For sure. I mean, because you think about the scorpion, the snake, and the dog.
Right.
That's got to be a biblical thing or something, right? Because I don't think they elaborated on it.
Yeah.
Just they did. I lost it.
No. Well, Vincent just talks about it being some kind of Babylonian deity, but it doesn't. Okay. It doesn't. And then he shows them the images of the snake and the scorpion and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I'm sure there's more into it, more in there than
we'll give Bagel a little bit more credit than I'm giving right now.
I like that. Usually I like to get into some of the production stuff. I couldn't find a ton, but I will say the stunt coordinator got fired on the spot because of a stunt that went wrong. Any guesses?
A stunt that went wrong. Well, I can only guess there's a hanging in a tree.
Bingo. That's it. That's it.
I mean, look, I have not looked at that, but there's got to be something gone wrong there.
I mean,
someone got hurt.
Apparently, the harnesses, one of the feet straps or something broke. And so one of the stunt actors was actually hanging and almost died. And they had to cut him down, and it was apparently a pretty fucking close call.
This would have been a way different movie.
Yeah, and so Derrickson fired him on the spot, the stunt coordinator, which is very understandable. And he said it's the scariest thing that's ever happened in his career.
So they're filming the shot. One of those actors in the hanging is probably for... Not in that particular take, necessarily.
Let's hope not.
Let's hope not. Is almost dying, literally.
Yeah, literally almost dying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good job, Scott. I'm glad you fired him.
Yeah. At least it wasn't a Alec Baldwin incident.
And also, this movie would have been way better. Dark comedy, everyone. I'm joking. We're joking here.
Well, it's like The Exorcist, where there's supposedly so many tragedies that happen on set, but it was really just William Friedkin's an asshole and, like, just tortured everybody the whole time.
Also, well, that's also true with The Shining and Stanley Kubrick with Shelley Duvall.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of, they're playing sorcery and trickery with their actors to make them the way they want them.
Both movies we've covered.
Yeah. Go check them
out. Go check them out. So that was, I mean, that's really my only tidbit on the production.
I would say this in terms of production, and it's maybe not a tidbit, but it's more like, I just wanted to talk about how the sound design and the score, do you think they elevate the terror? Or do they... Obviously, for me, the lawnmower scene, it's like whoever created that sound,
dude, what the fuck,
is amazing.
Normally, that's the kind of shit I would hate because it's all in the sound. But they earned that one. That one, I'm gonna give them a free pass on that jump scare because they earned that one. Because the other murders were slow and methodical, and you watched it, and this one was just out of the blue.
I would venture to say that's what makes that number 8 in Shudder's 101 Scariest Moments actually scary.
Yep.
The POV camera cinematography is great, but it's like that weird sound just, it almost ekes you. It's like a weird creation. So sound design, score, music, elevate it, or are they too tropey in areas where it's like...
I honestly thought that was one of the strong points. I loved...
Agreed.
Like, especially the car burning. When they burn the family in the car, whatever song, or I don't know if it was just muffled speaking, whatever the fuck that was they were playing, added to the creep factor.
Yeah.
It was fantastic.
So it's fair to say that those Super 8 sections were pretty creepy. Like, the way he filmed those, they felt real. And they were dark. And I think the sound actually helped enhance a lot of that, for sure.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, that's kind of all I have. I think we've kind of... I've expressed my feelings on this.
I mean, a couple more questions. Do you think Sinister earns its reputation as the scariest horror film?
No, not even close.
Okay.
And I assume you don't either.
No, Bagel doesn't do it for me.
Bagel definitely doesn't do it.
He's not a new horror icon, that's for sure.
I just want to give the benefit of the doubt. And I do want to say, I understand why people who may not be immersed in horror would think this is an especially scary movie. I get that. I don't agree, but I get it. So It's definitely not the scariest movie of all time.
No. Okay, last question, and before we kind of get into some of our normal stuff towards the end. Okay, you move into a house, right? Family is there.
Mm-hmm.
You're doing your thing. You find a mystery box of movies in your attic that you're just moving in day one, day two, whatever it is. What's the first thing you do when you find the box of home movies?
Bro, there's no way I'm not watching it.
Okay, so about... I agree.
Okay, good. I was going to say.
Okay, so I'm saying he got it right.
Yeah.
Right? I'm one of...
Are you watching it?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm watching them. Now, second follow-up.
Okay.
Murders on the Super 8. What do you do? What's the first thing you do once you see that?
First of all, I'm turning it off and I'm calling the cops.
Okay.
That's the first thing I'm doing. What about you?
Yes. Yeah. That would be my logical next step. Although the storyteller in me, here I come, Ellison. I'm Ellison all of a sudden.
Need to get you a cardigan.
I'm like, hey, maybe I keep watching this shit. Because what he ends up doing, I did notice that he took a couple shots of whiskey.
You would have to at that point. He's committing a crime, right?
Like he's an accomplice to it because he's actually... If it's real footage, which in Super 8 it would in some sense have to be.
At what point...
couldn't replicate
What does he think the end game is? That he's going to release this book and everyone's going to be like, never mind that you didn't turn this over to the cops. Forget it. Like, what does he think is going to happen?
I will just say, by the way, the deputy so-and-so...
Oh, dude, so good.
That was my favorite part.
Me too. So good.
When he's talking about the squirrels and the snakes and the squirrels.
Snakes don't have feet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just thought those were really funny.
Well, he was great.
And he was great. His character, that was a good choice by Derrickson to bring in some kind of real silly, you know, we're talking about horror being somewhat comedic or campy in a way. That actually was really funny. And I love that they brought Deputy, we call him so-and-so in the film. Last question before
The only problem with Deputy so-and-so is he's not credited as Deputy so-and-so in the movie.
What's he credited
Deputy.
As?
Deputy.
No.
Which is a big fail.
That's a big fail. Is that IMDb?
That's a fuck up. And I actually did, Jess and I were watching, and I was like, wait, I want to see how they credit him.
Or in
him.
The rolling credits.
It's still Deputy.
About.
Both.
You messed up.
Yeah.
You messed up.
They blew it.
Let's do one or two reviews first. Let's look at Rotten Tomatoes. I'll bring up Rotten Tomatoes. Sinister got a tomato meter of 64% and then a popcorn meter, which is the audience, of 62. So they're right in that 60-ish, that low 60s, basically. Okay. So there's that. The other one was IMDb. Do you have that one up on yours?
I do. That one is at 6.8 out of 10.
Okay. Where are you feeling?
That is a good question. This is, man. Okay. Here's how you have influenced me since we've been doing this podcast. I could be a lot more harsh back in the day,
I think you should be harsh today.
Today's the day I'm doing it. But I do know what it takes to make a film now. And also, you are a film evangelist, and that has rubbed off on me quite a bit. The fact that any movie gets made is a fucking miracle. We say this all the time. I know it sounds like a broken record. So, I don't know, man. Like, I wanted to like it. I really wanted to like it. Really bad. Like, it had all the elements, and I was super stoked, but I just couldn't do it. So, at the end of the day, I got to go 6.8. Hanging family members, and that's higher than I probably should go.
So you're essentially kind of matching the IMDb rating.
Yeah, I would say so. And also, I mean, one thing I don't think I really emphasize is the parts that work. I think are great.
Yeah,
I think they were done really well, and they really do work. And I wish I kind of would have focused more of that in our discussion, but I didn't. So fuck it. Here we are.
We move on.
6.8 hanging family.
I like that.
6.8 hanging family members.
What's the 0.8? Is it like the dog and a cat or a parakeet? How do you get 0.8 of a family member?
It's the dad's hands cut off. That's another thing that kind of bugged me was like, remember he's in his interview and his television interview and the reporter asks him, you know, is it more exciting to see your book at number one or that justice has been done? And he says, I'd rather have my hands cut off than justice not be done, or something like that. Why didn't you have his hands cut off at the end? I thought that, like, I literally said to my wife, I was like, foreshadowing, guaranteed. And no, nothing.
That's a good point.
Should have had his hands cut off.
And by the way, his daughter is possessed by Bagel.
Yeah.
And that's who chops him up. They should have cut his hands off.
Should have cut his hands off.
Well.
She had an axe.
Either way, he got what he deserved. We discovered he's an asshole.
Yep. At least the kid doesn't have night terrors anymore.
Well, she's now with Bagel.
She's with Bagel, getting her soul eaten.
Getting her soul eaten in the next Super 8.
Yeah.
Look, this has... Derrickson, looking at it from a technical standpoint, not that I'm a pro by any means, but he's a good filmmaker. You can tell, like, when you look at the way that he's positioned it, he always created it. He can tell... He understands the art of filmmaking.
Yep.
He understands camera positions, lighting. He understands how to resonate with the audience in some sense. He's trying to create an unsettling atmosphere of whatever it is. He can do that. So nothing to knock on him there. I don't think all the scares are effective. I think some of the jump scares are a bit cheesy, and maybe he's doing that intentionally. I will say Ethan Hawke is... I like him a lot, and like you mentioned earlier, it's hard to sustain 85% of the film by yourself. So I'm going to come in with, here's what's going to surprise you. I'm going to come in a little lower. The apologist in me is now deteriorating.
Okay.
I don't know about this movie, and the fact that I keep walking out after watching it twice, and that, I will say this in the apologist in me, it takes more than two watchings to really know a movie. It just does.
It does. It really does.
You can't go on a date with a girl and marry her after two dates.
Right.
5.9 bagels.
Yes. Here is how you have influenced me, because I watched it with, again, I watched it with my wife. I don't know if I've said that enough, but I've watched it with my wife. We got done. She liked it. She really liked it. And I said, what would you score it? And she said, she's like, I really liked it. Like, it was good. I liked it. I'd say probably 6.5. That's her really liking something. And I was like, holy shit, man. Like, I didn't really like it, and I'm higher than her. So that's, I mean, you have really rubbed off on me that I just, The stuff that they do so well, I'm trying to like grade that higher, you know?
Once again, I think that's fair. And what, it's only after two viewings, so I have to have that caveat. Because if I really want to break it down, here's the other thing. The more I watch it, I'll probably increase my score, because I'm constantly thinking about how they put the movie together.
Yeah.
But right now, it's 5.9 bagels.
It's a perfect ending to a perfect podcast. Go watch our, what were we talking about? We watched Exorcist and something else. Go listen to those episodes.
We had Exorcist on there. By the way, and this is not related to Sinister, but I think for Tame Aperture, this could be a funny thing real quick. I wanted to do a quick thing with you before we close out of our most watched video on YouTube.
Okay.
So we're on all the platforms, but YouTube, we have videos as well. If I gave you three reviews, you got to tell me which one has been viewed the most.
Okay.
One, Dogtooth. Two,
Yorgos.
Yorgos, our guy. Not my favorite Yorgos, by the way.
True.
Dogtooth. I Saw the Devil.
Oh, man.
Slither. Those are your three choices.
Oh, fuck. It's going to be Slither, isn't it?
Slither's got it.
Son of a bitch.
Slither's the most watched. It's got...
Frodo's going to be so happy about
that. The most watched. Followed by I Saw the Devil, followed by Dogtooth. But those are some of our higher viewed stuff. So Slither...
Here's a good question. Like, for the audience, do you want us to talk directors? Like, go into kind of depth with directors? Because I kind of like that idea of... We did that with Kubrick, and maybe we do it in one episode, maybe we do it a couple episodes, I don't know, but just kind of dive into a filmography and really get into it. I love that kind of shit. I don't know if that's fun to listen to, so let us know, because I would love to know what people think about that.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I think that's it. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Tame Aperture Podcast. Go to the website, tameaperture.com, and you can find all the old episodes, including our Exorcist interview. Go back and listen to that, because there were some really fun episodes and really fun films we watched. And yeah, until then, for Gabe, I'm Alan, and this is the Tame Aperture Podcast, signing out.
The Tame Aperture Podcast is produced by Dutch Angle Pictures in association with Studio B Productions. Listen, watch, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, and YouTube.